Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 203. In the news, I just wanted to say that we have a very special guest coming up on the Masonic Radio Theater to play a very cool part in the radio drama. I hope you'll all be super surprised and enjoy that very much. Those parts should be coming in this weekend. So we're going to start stitching it together and putting on the final effects. The Freemason 2 is raising tons of support, so please head on over to their Indiegogo page and check that out. Donate what you can. And this week on the show, we have a special guest, author of the book, The Masonic Initiate, Brother Braddock Joyner. And the book is called, again, The Masonic Initiate, A Guide to Light. And it's fairly new. It came out in this year, 2015. The first edition is out. And it's a very cool book that I think a lot of brothers are going to enjoy. So we'll go right into the interview. And shortly after the interview, we will have Stephen L. Harrison's Masonic Minute. So stay tuned. All right, everybody. We are lucky enough this evening, if you're listening in the evening or in the daytime, whenever, I'm talking to this brother at nighttime, so we're hanging out. It's about 9:15 Chicago time, 10:15 in Florida, and I'm talking to Brother Braddock A. Joyner, who is the author of a new book called The Masonic Initiate, A Guide to Light. And it is a fantastic book that I'm almost halfway through, and so far it is brilliant. Brother Brad, thanks so much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Brother Robert. It's a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So when I first started reading this book, a lot of Masons read books, right? They write books. We love to read and write and share our opinions. We write papers, and we all seem to have something to say about the fraternity, and rightly so. I mean, we are all brothers of a fraternity. We are, in our own right, experts in a sense. This book reads very different than many books that I've read. Number one, it is easy to open up to page one and in 15 minutes find yourself on page 30. So for those out there who are interested in this, definitely go pick this up. If you paid attention on Friday evening, last Friday, I posted a link to the book on Amazon.com if anybody wanted to start reading it before we got to the interview on Sunday. And I'm going to start off, I just want to read a quick quote from the book that I thought was brilliant. Now, the book itself, Brad, it's an esoteric journey, is it not?
Oh, very much so. It's the objective of the book is to influence, push out the spiritual inculcations and the degrees of Freemasonry. This book more explicitly, The Entered Apprentice.
So exactly. The book really does focus on the Entered Apprentice degree, the importance of the degree, the symbolism inside of it. It really dissects things better than a lot of other sources have. And where I have to give you some big props is that so many people will write a book and they will talk about things and say, this could mean this, this could mean that. And I really enjoy the fact that you just put it out there like it is esoteric. That is, it is. Okay, there's no dancing around. We're not tap dancing around the subject. For lack of a better words to choose here, you're not worried about hurting anybody's feelings. You're just saying what you got to say and putting it out there. And I found this quick little part here just amazing. So he says, I find it insulting to tell a newly raised brother that there is no rank higher than a Master Mason. And when they ask for direction from the officers and mentors of a lodge, they are told to, quote-unquote, get involved in the kitchen or, quote-unquote, help clean up after dinner. Is that all we have to offer our brothers? This is a shameful representation of the craft. Freemasonry often loses these brothers, and rightfully so. It is incredibly important that our brothers have mentors capable of delivering the deeper symbolism and insights of the craft. It is not enough only to have the repetition of lectures and rituals by a small handful of brothers. This responsibility, if anyone's, has to fall in the lap of the sitting master of the lodge. How can anyone sit in the East without understanding the light in which they emanate while in this position? How many masters of a lodge are actively in pursuit of a greater cause? How many take their position as the man who brings other brothers from darkness to light? So let's talk about that a little bit.
That's one of the most controversial, or should I say most popular, points in that book. More people come up to me, more brothers, and ask me about that paragraph, and almost anything else in the book. It's quite interesting. I had a brother on the Grandland level. He was talking to me. He gave me some advice that I think would have been good to add to the book. But, you know, at that point in time, I didn't want to. It's already halfway into the production. But something that could have maybe properly more emphasized that is, well, there's nothing wrong with helping out in the kitchen. There's nothing wrong with laboring in the quarries. It's a vital part of the process. Can't neglect any of these aspects of our own being. You know, while you have to eat before you can calm your mind enough to sit down and write a book or do anything that takes mental energy, and before you can actually try to attune yourself to listen to God, you really must calm your mind even. So you have to suit these different aspects of your being progressively to dive into them, but at the same time, you have to have a balance between all of them. At any point in time, if you don't take care of your body, you can all of a sudden fall into a depression or you know, malnutrition or whatever the case may be. The topic wasn't so much to push that it's not good to help out. It is good to help out. It was mainly meant to push forward the idea that, like you said, I'm blatantly putting it out there. Freemasonry is a spiritual, while it is a moral school of instruction, it openly admits that everything in it has multiple meanings.
Right.
So this book tries to bring out the spiritual aspects. What are the spiritual inculcations in these symbols and in the degree?
One of the things that I found fascinating also was just previous to what I just read in the book, you say all too often brothers in search of light are discouraged when they discover the lodge that they have just joined simply partakes in occasional dinners and charities and nothing more. After all the secrecy and hype, the newly raised brother only finds camaraderie and philanthropy on the trestle board supplied by the master of his lodge. What you were saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing the philanthropy and doing the helping and stuff, but in the book, it is the gold in this book is right in the first chapter, and this is what hooked me was on page 3, is where you say, you know, too often candidates are initiated into an order that they have little or no appreciation for, and that there are too many brothers who aren't content with the robotic repetition of ceremonies of which they have no insight. But what I found awesome is where you say, just the same, there are many brothers who are engaged in that holy and eternal quest. It is the prerogative of all good Masons to live with hopes of improving ourselves and the world around us, and we want to be better. For some, this means being courteous and charitable. For Masonry, it means enlightenment and apotheosis. That last line, I think, defines Masonry, what I had always envisioned it to be. So for that, I have to thank you for putting into words, finally on paper, what I've never seen anybody put on paper in quite that way.
Well, thank you. Thank you, brother, for that. You know, there's really, you know, three facets of Masonry that appeal to a man as he tries to join the lodge. You know, you have those brothers that join for the camaraderie and the fellowship. You know, they might have been for that, or that might be the fulfilling aspect of Masonry that they find when they join the lodge. Some might join it for the philanthropy and the charity. And then you have that third group of brothers like myself and you that are there for the esoteric, the deeper understandings. They want to actually dive into spiritual aspects that they're not getting in outer society. You know, we can easily fulfill our needs of camaraderie and philanthropy and charity by not being part of any organization at all. While Freemasonry does it greater than anyone else, that spiritual, that coming together that Masonry has created, where all men can come on the level and spiritually worship, is truly, I believe, be the most divine revelation for man to have, and that ultimately brings the purpose of Masonry. If we're really the most noble, magnanimous order, then what is that cause? It can't just be simply charity. You know, I want to say that charity and philanthropy and camaraderie and fellowship are characteristics of the type of people we are. As Masons, the end game of Masonry is to achieve that spiritual apotheosis, that enlightenment, and simply charity, camaraderie, those are just characteristics of a Mason. I don't believe that those are actually what defines Masonry.
I find that a very true statement. It is something that Frater O and I have talked about on the show as well, which is walking the walk. Nobody can eat for you. You have to do the work, and it is not simply just this repetition of dialogue. It is not a place that you joined up just so that you could network. It is a society of men where, you know, we talked about it, and we called the Blue Lodge the waiting room. We always call it the waiting room, right? Because we're always waiting around for other like-minded esoteric individuals to sooner or later find themselves within the order. And maybe, you know, we get together with those guys. And like you said, there are plenty of people. Like, I've got a great friend and brother. His name is Dan Gentry, who is just phenomenal. And he is one of the most knowledgeable guys I know in the craft. But he joined because of the camaraderie. I'm sure he has since found all facets of Masonry fascinating, with the exception of titles. but he's a great brother, and you know, so I know a lot of guys who came in for that camaraderie, but they also are there for that spiritual element, that ability to be around like-minded individuals who want more out of this reality.
You know, those brothers that are there for the charity, that are there for the camaraderie, they're really just as good a brother as any. You know, the dedication in my book, there's a little line in there, and I believe this to be true, and a lot of esoteric heads might lose sight of this, myself included, is that you can learn more, a man can learn more about how to be a good Mason by watching how other good Masons carry themselves and live their lives, more so than reading any amount of book.
Yep.
I did
read that, and that's like right in the first few pages. So you say in your book, it says Freemasonry being subject to persecution through various times in history has always maintained a certain level of secrecy. Secrecy is an incredible important aspect of the Masonic process for more reasons than that of just face value. But it is the distortion which advocates Masonic secrecy only being relevant to modes of recognition and ritual work that has created a taboo inhibiting Freemasonry's retention of education as it progresses through the generations of man. Because of the modern forms of communication, media, and information distribution, Freemasonry has had most of its forms and secrets exposed by apostate Masons, cowans, and eavesdroppers. Still, it seems modern Freemasonry has perpetuated the mistake of keeping secrecy above the idea of keeping practice. Many Masons have become so worried about hiding our practices that most don't even practice them anymore. And so this is what I was kind of alluding to, was you have to walk the walk and talk the talk. Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about what it means to practice Masonry, maybe esoterically?
Now, to practice Masonry esoterically, in reference to this book, there's actually a section in it, Practical Masonry. If you're halfway through the book, then you'll be coming up to it. It's a little bit towards the end there. I try to tie in applications, spiritual applications that you find in traditional and contemporary practices throughout the world. Things like visualization, meditation, and explained concepts like the Maharishi Effect, Napoleon Hill's Mastermind, or Carl Jung, I believe he called it, the collective consciousness. That's when we're all in a lodge together, meditating on the same concept. Synergy, 1 + 1 = 3 type of thing.
Right.
So these are all practical applications. If we can understand how we're interacting with the universe in this respect, we can apply it towards mastering our actions and ourselves. Just like with astronomy, if Mars would be in a certain position, you take due notice thereof and govern yourself accordingly. With the knowledge that you had and its effects on you, you can then create ideal scenarios for your existence and facilitate the betterment of everything. These are practical applications in Freemasonry that I think our ancient brethren were well aware of and actively in pursuit of applying. And I'd like to revive that interest within the fraternity of applying these spiritual ideas towards Masonry.
I would too. I mean, when I think about why I joined the fraternity, it definitely was for an esoteric purpose. Of course, I didn't necessarily find it like so many, like 95% of the esoteric Masons I know didn't find it in Blue Lodge. We found it in a sinking ship, right? So essentially, I'm a trainer by trade, is what I used to do. And I used to show a PowerPoint presentation where I would show a group of people all huddled together and scared on a sinking ship like a Titanic. And I would show them, I'd say, what are these people together? Like, what brings these people together, right? It's the fear. It's the lost hopes. All these things. But that's why they're gathered together. And then I would show another picture, a winning team of people who were all jumping for joy that they won the game or whatever it was. And why are these people together? Well, they're together because they're winning. You know, that's what it was. And it seemed to me like a lot of esoteric Masons, when I came in, we were on the sinking ship. We gathered together because we had nowhere else to go. Nobody understood what we wanted to know. But then we found the lodge libraries in our buildings, and nobody had touched the door handle in 20 years. And we opened it up, and boom, on the third shelf down is an Egyptian Book of the Dead. It's one of those things where we're finding ourselves finally in a place of not power or anything like that, but we got involved, and we're able to let new brothers coming in know that, hey, you're esoteric, right? It's okay. A lot of us are. This is the way things are kind of coming about again. We're all coming together, and And it's a really great feeling to know that it's coming around again. The folks out there are, they're reading books again, and they're writing books, and they're reading old texts, and you're hearing people complain about things that maybe we should complain about. Videos, video degrees, and these kind of things.
You know what? It's a double-edged sword, the technology era. While it may have exposed a lot of Freemasonry's things that necessarily shouldn't be out there, and while it may have given the ability to do things like video degrees and things that shouldn't, that I don't agree with necessarily.
Neither do I.
I think it'd take away from the process, obviously. At the same time, this boost in esoteric-minded individuals joining Freemasonry, could that not be attributed to all this information being out on the internet? Like myself, if the internet didn't exist, I probably wouldn't know about many, many authors. Like I start naming them, but I realize they're not Masons. You know, people like Rudolf Steiner and Max Heindel, you know, some of these more occult authors, A.E. Waite, I would have never came across their actual work had I not had the internet not existed. And, you know, would I ever have interpreted Freemasonry as being that organization that might have supplied some of that, what I was looking for? I might have never associated the two had it not been for this technology. So I guess it might be a double-edged sword. You know, if it weren't for the internet, would it be where it is? Who knows?
And that's kind of where I also draw that line, because if it wasn't for the internet, back in the day, you didn't know if a brother was a brother. One day you saw his ring and you asked, and that's how you got in. I'm referred to as a quote-unquote successful web inquiry, which means 8 years ago, I sent an email to the Grand Lodge of Illinois. They sent an email to the secretary, who then called me and told me to go out to lunch with a guy that I worked with. And then I petitioned a lodge, got involved, went through every chair, and became the master of a lodge. And I'm not, you know, just the kind of guy who goes, all right, I'm the master, but I'm not going to do any work. I'll just get other people to do, you know, I obligate every candidate. I do all my work. So yeah, I mean, technology has been there for us. And it's true. You know, I wouldn't have got to read literally my favorite book of all time if it hadn't been for the internet, because I would have to make a trip down to the Scottish Rite House of the Temple to get into the library to read a chapter every weekend if I hadn't had the internet and been able to download a PDF copy of it. So that's what I find kind of interesting. What would you say to, there are brothers who feel like guys like the Esoteric Masons, who we get up here and we'll get on a show like this and we talk about what Masonry means to us, and that it is esoteric, and that we need to stop playing up this and that. We need to really focus back on the work again. What do you say to the brothers that call us elitists? That is something that I have heard over and over again. Like, if I'm on Reddit, they'll be like, oh, here goes these guys with this elitist Masonry again. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, it goes back to something we were talking about a little bit before with the different types of reasons why brothers might join a lodge. And that, you know, regardless of what it is, the camaraderie, whether it's the charity, the philanthropy, whether it's the esoteric stuff, whatever it is that interested them when they petitioned the lodge, they could still become great brothers. They could still be great men and masons. Every single individual is on a different level, you know, in the progress on their path that they're going down. And we have to be mindful of that. We're all on the level. We've all been obligated to God. We all believe in God. Who am I to say that my understanding brings me any closer than yours? We're right there in the same boat. At the end of the day, fear not the man who searches for the answer. Fear the man who claims he has it. So, you know, in one sense, I've been guilty of it myself. I've gotten frustrated. You know, I've seen things in Lodge that I wouldn't agree with. And I'm like, you know, there should be a little bit more sanctified, you know, in my opinion. And at the same time, these same individuals are so much better at different aspects of their life than what I've obtained yet, whether it be in their own personal life, in the outer world outside the lodge, which is really just as important. It being a moral school of instruction, you know, as we have to better not just ourselves, but the world around us. So in that sense, I do understand the elitist concept. I've been guilty of it myself. Ultimately, it's all about harmony and balance. That's what we have to strive to achieve.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. It is just one of those things where somebody will say it, and I'm like, great, now I have to do this again. Trying to defend what my position in the fraternity is. Not literal position, but, you know, my thoughts on it. I wanted to read one more quote from you, and this I found was beautiful, Brad. I think so many brothers are going to identify with this particular quote, and you said, I was brought from the degenerate world of darkness and guided into light. This had such a profound impact on me. That was when I said to myself, wow, this is real. I am lucky to be part of such a dedicated lodge with brothers who took the time and effort to ensure I was given a proper initiation. We all have that epiphany when we see in the degree, and you captured that just perfectly in that sentence. Wow, this is real. I mean, I think we all said that.
If that's the one moment in Masonry. If I could immortalize it, I would. I've gone through the York Rite, Scottish Rite, and all sorts of different side degrees, and really that entered apprentice degree. I mean, one of the mentors, one of the greatest Masons I know to this day, just a stand-up individual in every facet of life. He was in the East. He's the one who obligated me. It was quite moving, quite moving. I'll never forget that. I will never forget that moment.
It is funny. You touch on the solemnity of the degree work. Here in Illinois, before a third degree happens, we are caused to read a section of the Grand Lodge bylaws that basically says any goofiness, horseplay, any laughing will be met with the hammer, basically. You know, there will be no things to pull the importance of the degree down. It must remain solemn. And I find it that we only read that on the third degree in the second section kind of messed up. I mean, I would love to read that before every degree because, especially in this first degree, you make a great point in the book that the Entered Apprentice degree, you only get to do that one time.
Yeah, you know, there's charges, opening and closing charges for any time you open and close a lodge for any degree. And these charges, they kind of hint on those and inculcate, but they're never done. They're rarely, rarely, hardly ever done. They're always optional and exempt. You know, how many brothers are out there actually learning the work? Now, for obvious reasons, you know, the Master Mason degree is a very solemn moment. What occurs in that degree is no laughing matter. The most solemn moment of any individual's of existence, life as we know it. So I think it's, you know, there is something similar in Florida. It's not something taken straight out of the digest or the bylaws or anything like that, but there is something recited emphasizing that there should be no horseplay or anything like that. And, you know, rightfully so. But, you know, if you go further, I found, especially in the York Rite, you'll find you'll find these lessons brought to light even more clear, reemphasized. I can't go too explicitly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, we all know. I mean, I like to quote Tom Cruise when people ask me about Masonry, and he, of course, was talking about Scientology, but I apply it to Masonry, and that is just my blanket answer that I give is, when you know, you know. So, I mean, if you're in the York Rite, you know that it enriches your previous experiences.
Yeah.
So there you have it, everybody. Brother Bradrick Joyner, his new book, The Masonic Initiate, A Guide to Light. In the show notes, we're going to have links to all of this so that you can download the book. It's a Kindle book, as well as I'll put his website on there also. It's www.bradrickbooks.com. And on there also, he has not only this book, but he has another book that isn't Masonic. It's called Ethics, Deductions, and Common Sense. And it is what it sounds like. It is kind of a philosophical type of a book, ethics and that kind of thing. Brother Brad, thanks so much for being on the program, brother.
Brother Robert, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Awesome. Well, we'll hope to have you back on soon, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about this phenomenon of the esoteric Masons and kind of how we're pushing through the West Gate. We're breaking it down.
That'd be great. I'd enjoy that tremendously. Yeah.
All right. Take care.
You do the same. Thank you.
It is part of the American dream. Any man or woman, even of modest means, can, through hard work and perseverance, make it to the top. It may be rare, but it does happen. Perhaps also rare is the person who makes it big, but never forgets those humble beginnings or the people who were there to help along the way. Such a person was born on September 16, 1875 in Hamilton, Missouri. The house he grew up in was less than 600 square feet. His parents, devout Christians, scratched out a living on their rural Missouri farm, while his father maintained a Baptist ministry for which he was not compensated. Times were tough. Such were the meager beginnings of James Cash Penny, better known as J.C. Penny. A dual member of Wasatch Lodge 1 in Salt Lake City, and United Services Lodge 1118 in New York, Penny was also an active member in the York and Scottish Rites. Although he moved away from Hamilton to make his fortune, he never forgot his hometown. He came back many times, most notably in 1924, to open the 500th J.C. Penney store there. In 1949, Hamilton built a new high school. Over half of the money for the project, $250,000, came from Penny himself, and he attended its cornerstone ceremony with the local Lodge brothers. Penny was not a member of the Masonic Lodge in town, Hamilton 224, but he attended on occasion, and in 1962, presided over a 25-year pin ceremony there. The lodge occupied the second level of the J.C. Penney store in town. In 1960, the Hamilton brothers set out on a project to refurbish the lodge. In addition to interior repairs, the exterior steps leading to the second floor needed painting. The brothers decided a coat of aluminum paint would make the steps look sharp and stand out against the brick structure, and they began making plans to paint them. They figured, however, since Brother Penny owned the building, they should ask his permission before proceeding. Penny replied with a short note expressing full faith in the brothers' judgment and giving them permission to paint the steps with aluminum paint. In his own mind, he thought black might wear better than aluminum, and in what was almost an offhand remark, he said, "I am wondering if black paint wouldn't be more successful than the aluminum." With Penny's permission, the brothers enthusiastically set out on the project. Hamilton 224 has since moved to a different location, but the original historic building where the J.C. Penney store and lodge were located still stands, and its exterior steps are still painted the same color the brothers selected and which Penny suggested in his offhand remark, black. For the Whence Came You podcast, I'm Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, this week's famous Freemason is Charles Adams. Some may know him from ice hockey. He was born October 18th, 1876, passed away October 2nd, 1947. And he was an American businessman and sports promoter who was the owner of the Boston Bruins, Boston Braves, Suffolk Downs, and the First National grocery store chain. Adams was born in Newport, Vermont on October 18th to Frank and Elizabeth. His family struggled financially at a young age. Adams took a job as a chore boy at a corner grocery store to help subsidize the family's income. As a teenager, Adams purchased logs for his father's sawmill. After graduating from Jersey Business College in Vermont, Adams moved to Springfield, Vermont, where he worked for his uncle Oscar Adams' wholesale grocery business. After working for a time as a traveling grocer and tobacco salesman, Adam moved to Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he became a treasurer of the New England Maple Syrup Company. He later worked for the Fitzgerald Hubbard & Company banking and brokerage firm. Adams left Fitzgerald Hubbard & Company to work for the John T. Connor Company, which later became the First National store chain. Adams was an avid hockey fan, watching amateur hockey in Boston and traveling to Montreal to watch professional hockey. After a scandal involving a Boston amateur hockey players that resulted in many Boston fans becoming disenchanted with amateur hockey, Adams decided to try to bring professional hockey to the United States. On November 1st, 1924, Adams was awarded the Bruins franchise for $15,000. In 1926, Adams bought the entire Western Canada Hockey League from Frank Patrick and Lester Patrick for $300,000. This gave the Bruins the rights to Eddie Shore, Harry Oliver, Duke Keats, and Frank Boucher. To ensure the team had a fitting arena to play in, Adams guaranteed $500,000 toward the construction of the Boston Garden. Under his leadership, the Bruins won their first Stanley Cup in 1929. In 1936, he transferred his stock to his son, Weston Adams, and minority owners Art Rose and Ralph Bouchard. On May 15, 1927, Charles Adams bought out the shares of Albert H. Powell to become a minority owner and vice president of the Boston Braves. In 1935, after Emil Fuchs' attempt to revive interest in the team by signing Babe Ruth failed, Adams demanded that Fuchs either step down as president or buy out his shares. And on July 31, 1935, Emil Fuchs forfeited his shares to Charles F. Adams, who planned to sell the team as soon as possible. On November 26, the National League took over control of the Braves due to the club's failure to fulfill contractual obligations. The club was awarded to Bob Quinn on December 10th. Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis did not allow Adams to be part of the new ownership group due to his stake in Suffolk Downs. Adams was the head of an Eastern Racing Association, the syndicate that founded Suffolk Downs. He remained involved with the racetrack until 1945 when he sold his shares for $4 million. Adams died on October 2nd, 1947 in Boston after a long illness. He was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame in 1960. The NHL's Adams Division was formed in 1974 as part of the Prince of Wales Conference. The division existed for 19 seasons until 1993. It was named in honor of Adams. It is the forerunner of the NHL's Northeast Division. Adams was inducted into the Vermont Sports Hall of Fame in 2013. I couldn't actually find his lodge name and number, but several websites list him as a Shriner, as well as a Knight Templar. So, in order to be members of those, you do have to be a Freemason, so perhaps, in this case, one and one makes two. So that's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Whence Came You. Check out Google+. We're on there under the email address wcypodcast@gmail.com. You can email me there or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Please don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons coming out with three articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You can also check us out in the Working Tools magazine. The Masonic Roundtable comes out every Tuesday night at 10, 9 central. Next Tuesday is sure to be an interesting topic. We're going to be talking about something super, super crazy. And if you don't know what that is, or you're listening to this in the future, you're going to want to go back and listen to episode number 75 of the Masonic Roundtable. Next week, we will have Frater O back on the show. He and I will be talking about something really neat, which we're going to read a paper, and then there's going to be a surprise after the paper, and then we're going to talk about it. So, until next week, guys, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.